The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Monday, off and running another week. We have plenty to get to around the Final Four, some guests that may drop in. We shall see. Had a terrific weekend. MC'd an event on Saturday night, the National Football Foundation Awards Dinner at the Scottsdale Hilton. It was a lot of fun. High school, college, met Jack Lengel, the guy, coach from We Are Marshall. He was there. Bill and Janie Riddle with the NFF, National Football Foundation, Adam Turner. They all did a terrific job. So MC'd that. And yesterday, just watched basketball. Just watched a ton of college basketball and was in and out of the game Saturday night, other than found a way before the event at the bar, of course, the poolside bar, to watch Loyola Chicago and the Ramblers do their thing with Sister Jean. Sister Jean has become, she trademarked her stuff today. I love this. I love the fact that we can find ways, I'm not being critical of her, but somebody got to her and said, you know, there's all these bandanas and shirts and hats that have Sister Jean on them, and people are just taking advantage of you. 98 years of age, and if you've been following March Madness, and if you haven't followed it, just Google Sister Jean. You will see what all the buzz and all the hype is about. You may be too busy. I got it. Gilbert Christian is being well represented at the Final Four. Cameron Satterwhite and Mitch Lightfoot. Cam with Loyola and Mitch with Kansas. So there is a local tie to what's going on at March Madness, which is very good to see. Kevin Harlan is scheduled to be with us today. CBS College Basketball, NFL on CBS play-by-play voice. It's always good to have Kevin Harlan as he just went through the Final Four. And we may have some guests along the lines of the Final Four, too. I don't want to promote ahead in case things don't come to fruition. So let's get started there. Brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, guys, it's the start of a new week. When was the last time you sat and thought about life insurance? Brad, I've never thought about life insurance. Well, maybe you should. You've got to protect what matters most. That is your family. That is your friends. That is the people around you. Sagicor Now. Log on, get your free quote online. You can do it simply by going to Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, we appreciate their support. All right, so there's plenty to get to today around the Final Four. There's some interesting things in the NFL. The Diamondbacks announcing that Patrick Corbin's going to start on opening day. We'll get into that. And a little bit more about the event the other night. But I'm going to start on the Final Four and where things are. The hatred towards Duke. Let's just begin there. I can't remember a player. Eric, has there been a player outside of Grayson Allen that has been more hated, that people have reveled more in losing, or Duke getting eliminated in overtime yesterday by Canada? Has there been a player that's come along recent history?
Oh,
of Grayson Allen?
No, not recent history. I could have named a bunch. Let's see. Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley.
Okay,
you're sensing a theme here.
Okay, they were Dukes.
Yep.
They were Dukies.
Off the top of my head, no, but social media was buzzing when Grayson Allen pretty much melted down at the end of regulation and in overtime. Although that shot at the end of regulation I thought was going to go in.
Articles and like long thought out national publications. This isn't just people on Twitter's taking shots at Grayson Allen. This was the most hated guy in recent college basketball history. What is it with Mike Krzyzewski and people's hatred towards Duke?
But Grayson Allen is easy to hate.
Oh, that's true.
And he's
I
don't either, but he's part of his own problem, because if it was an isolated incident with, I don't know, a trip or a hip check or a shove.
Leave of absence, melting down on the bench.
No big deal. Yeah, exactly. You can keep going and going. But when it's happened pretty consistently over a four-year period and you throw gasoline on the fire and the fact that plays for Duke, it's a national storm for Grayson Allen. But it was interesting because ESPN.com, Brad, did a big takeout feature on him on Friday.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw it, and talked about how Grayson Allen off the court is introverted, shy, doesn't like, even as freshman and sophomore, didn't even really like to go out to dinner, would rather just hang out in his dorm room and play video games. Interesting to see the back half perspective of what he's like off the court.
But, you know, the questioning to him on Friday, so I saw some of the same stuff you did, but there were people that were asking him about not being well-liked.
Yep.
And
Man. He doesn't like not being well liked. Yet he, consistently puts himself in.
You know, Kobe Bryant was a villain. I always
JJ Redick.
Okay, so
loves,
but again,
loves the hatred.
Another Duke guy.
Right.
But it's like Kobe, people, I think when you get booed, that's the ultimate sign of respect.
Of course. And
but
sports, I don't think, sports needs villains.
But I don't think booing, Grayson Allen is the, you're a villain. I just think people don't flat like him. Like, you can boo Kobe Bryant all day long, but he's a certain first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest players in the history of the NBA, right? So, but
sure.
Grayson Allen is not going to be that. There's just something.
No.
Is it the overexposure of Duke players? Is it all the things you listed earlier? The day before he's playing in the Elite Eight, the line of questioning goes to, why is it people don't like you?
And as one of my friends said, who I was watching the game with yesterday, he's like, Grayson Allen just has one of those hittable faces.
You know what?
He
That's
has that
true.
He has that little smirk, and he has that little, like, arrogance, but he should. He's a Duke basketball player and a really good player.
And he kept clanking shots.
He did.
He was doing paint chippers and glass chippers, as I call them, in crunch time.
Great game yesterday, though.
But when you see Marvin Bagley, and DeAndre Ayton, so there's this conversation, this line of, well, DeAndre Ayton did not have as long a postseason run as Marvin Bagley. And thus, Marvin Bagley was able to show more of what makes him go. We're sitting here in Phoenix, where, by the way, guys from the Suns that watch this, how is it you crapped the bed almost Saturday night and won a game at Orlando? How is that? I had people, while I'm emceeing, texting me saying, you will not believe this. The Suns might win a game. There was someone involved with the production of this show I did. His phone had the little advisor, and he opens it up, the little urgent tag, and it was the Suns lost. And he's like, whew, I thought they're going to screw this thing up. This is somebody who loves the Suns, who lives and breathes and dies with the Suns. They almost won a stinking game in the end of March after they've screwed up so badly. How can you do that?
Do you want to hear some amazing statistics? I put a story up on the website yesterday at sports360az.com. when we had Brian Windhorst on,
yeah.
And I did a little research before I penned the story last night. The Suns have 9 home wins. 9. They're the only team in the NBA that has not hit double digit in home wins. They won't get it tonight. They're playing the Celtics. The Suns
have lost.
Doesn't matter. The Suns have lost 21 of 22 games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tankapalooza at its very best. And most of the losses, if you go back, Brad, are 24, 28, 42, 9, 18,
whoa,
23.
Whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We're trying to win games.
Right.
If I'm to believe the general manager, right? If I'm to believe the owner was, you know, I'm disappointed we haven't seen more of an effort. If I'm to believe the head coach who wants to be here, he's trying to coach, right? You know, I mean, these injuries that have come along to Devin Booker and TJ Ward all of a sudden, it's when all this is done and they get it turned around someday, I don't know when someday will be, but when they get it turned around someday, if people don't write about these last 8 years, if all they do is say, yeah, they went through a time of irrelevance and that's it, that's not doing justice. You have to hammer these fools when they do this. You have to. You just have to. You've taken the brightest, shiniest thing and screwed it up so badly. So, yeah, I'm going to bring it up all the time. I'm not going to sit here and say, wow, Marquise Chris played great the other night. This bogus headline about Suns lose, Chris plays great. What are you talking about? They lost again. Stop. You're trying to find positives in a bleep storm. It's a bleep storm. Okay? It just is. So just stop with the cheerleading. We do not need it. There is no reason to be cheering. Bring back Trophy Guy for the last game. Bring back Trophy Guy for draft night. That's a great idea. Trophy Guy needs to be at lottery ball night. In fact, the Suns should send Trophy Guy to ping pong ball night. Have him there in the stands. It would be perfect. That and the guy that dresses in orange who shows up on the postgame show jumping around with 5 other people. Put them both out there. The thing about Bagley versus Ayton, I still would go with Ayton. You know, this has nothing to do when people send me notes, are you just hating on him because he left Corona del Sol? No, he didn't. It was the dad that screwed that thing up. he'd still be doing what he's doing today if he'd stayed at Corona. Let's just be very clear about that. There's been no benefit to him leaving, and he was well-adjusted and liked being in school, and he's still well-adjusted today. There's been no benefit to him leaving. He should have stayed at Corona Del Sol and been one of the greatest, probably the greatest player to come out of here. But when I see Bagley versus Ayton and I look at the Suns, I have to have a dominant physical presence inside. And I think Bagley likes being outside some. I'm just hoping the Suns get the number one overall pick after all of this, and that they have to choose between Bagley and Ayton. It's going to tear the community up. Like, I've already said, Ayton is the guy. Eric, where are you at on Bagley Ayton today? Do you have a you got a thought on that one? If we're talking Suns, now they're both out.
Let's see. If the Suns have the first pick, it's got to be Ayton. But if the Suns land at number two and it's Bagley, that's fine too.
It's a good consolation prize.
And I guess I haven't seen the European kid that's also considered a top 3-4 pick, but he's also a really good player. But I mean, if I have the first pick, it's a no-brainer. I take DeAndre Ayton.
Because this is the same management group that took Dragan Bender at number 4. Right? This is the same management.
Yes.
This is the same ownership group that took Alex Len at 5.
But you can't put DeAndre Ayton in the same sentence as Dragan Bender.
No, but if they go below 1 or 2.
Alex Len.
If they go below 1 or 2, this is the same group that took Marquise Chris as a lottery pick. And all he does is jump high and get fouls.
But Mo Bamba from Texas is a really good player. If the Suns somehow slip to like 4 or 5,
Can you imagine if they don't? After all of this work, and now that Bagley and Ayton have both been on display, I'm so excited for either one, but I want the number one pick in Ayton. I do. All right, more on the March Madness on the other side. We may have a guest here. We may not. I'm not going to tease ahead because it's one of those we're just trying. And we'll be back with more. Stay with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Susmat. All right, let's turn our attention now to March Madness. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Brad Susmat with you. I mentioned off the top how Gilbert Christian has great representation now going to the Final Four, as we like to localize what's going on in San Antonio. And I saw Cameron Satterwhite and I saw Mitch Lightfoot play back in the day over Gilbert Christian. Both of them have gone on. Cam had to take a bit of a detour with a knee injury, and he is come back from that. He is at Loyola of Chicago. He is part of the Ramblers. He is part of Sister Jean. And Cam Satterwhite joins us live for a couple of minutes on the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no worries, Cam. So let's just go through this. Your journey that took you to Loyola and how it got you to this point in a Final Four. You could have never seen that company, obviously, at Gilbert Christian. But your journey to Loyola, because it wasn't to begin with, right?
It wasn't. I was committed to Colorado University, but things have happened, changed schools, and I'm just glad that it worked out for the best.
You went through a bad knee injury too, right?
Yes, I tore my ACL.
Yeah, and
my right knee.
And there was a time there where I felt like, okay, it'll be interesting to see if he's able to come all the way back from the adversity that you face. Just take me through that journey a little bit.
It's just being poised. A lot of people didn't know how I would respond from it. My sister also tore her ACL, so we went through it together. So it was good having another person right there by my side to go through my recovery. And I just wanted to stay poised throughout and knew that everything was not over and, like, I can still come back.
That was the side story to the story was your sister, and she tore playing basketball too, right, if I remember correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, so she tears her ACL, and it was close to the same date as you tore yours, if I remember correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About a week and a half, too.
Yeah. And your sister, the age difference between you two is how much?
A year and a half.
Okay, so a year and a half, and you both tear ACLs. You could have done the 2-for-1 at the hospital, right? You could have just said, let's do 2-for-1 here. Let's get these both done at the same time. But did you guys rehab together?
We did. We actually had the surgery at the same day.
So you did do a 2-for-1.
She went in, Yeah, she went in first, and then I came in right after.
And what hospital was that here in Phoenix?
Banner.
Over at Banner. That's great. That's great. So Colorado goes away. How did you get to Loyola of Chicago? Who made the connection? Who made the contact? Was it your club coach? Who made that?
Yeah.
Who made that happen?
My AAU coach, John Ortega.
Okay. And we know Coach Ortega well. And when he first approached you about Loyola of Chicago, what were you thinking?
It was Chicago, so it was a far ways from home. But at that point, I wanted to get as much looks as I can, give any school a chance. And Coach Dildy, who is not there anymore, but he recruited me. I really loved the school. I really loved what he had to say, and I took an offer. I got the offer, and I took a visit there, and I really liked what I saw.
Yeah, Cam Satterwhite with us, and when I saw Cam at Gilbert Christian, he was a player on a pogo stick. I mean, you could leap, and you could make plays, and that was a heck of a squad you had there with Mitch and company. So you go there, and let's go to this season then. Did you see the possibility of a team that could be playing in a Final Four? You've never been there before, but did you look around and say, you know what, we got a squad here. We can make this happen.
And I did. Our team is very, very close. We're a lot of guys with a chip on our shoulder. We always want to prove people wrong. Like, everybody has their own story on how they got there, and we wanted to bring that to the court and use it for the better. And our coach has done a good job of instilling that in us, too. So, I mean, in our locker room, I could see us making this run.
And this run, so you get into March, you look at the draw, you see the teams. Nobody's saying that your squad's going to be the squad, but the belief was there. Are you surprised that you're going to San Antonio now?
I mean, you're always surprised. I'm surprised, but I know that we put in a lot of work to be here, and we're here for a reason. Yes, you can see the games come down to last shots and all of that, but it's just when you got guys who can believe things like this can happen, and we put in a lot of work.
Sister Jean has received a lot of attention, and you've probably been asked about Sister Jean a ton, but for those of us out here in Arizona, I'm going to go through the Sister Jean line of questioning, okay? When did you first meet her, and what is Sister Jean all about from your view?
I met Sister Jean on my visit. So she's the team chaplain. She's the biggest fan. Like, she's just as happy that we're doing so well as we are. Like, she's the biggest fan. And what was your second question? I'm sorry.
When you first met her, how was she? And you said you met her on your visit, and just how she's mm-hmm. impacted the team and maybe yourself.
She impacts the team huge. Like, we get a scouting report from her every game. Every game since I've been here, we get a scouting report. We get an email from her. She prays before every game before us. She's a huge factor. She tells us the best team's best players who to watch out for.
Mm-hmm.
All of that. So she's a big part of this team.
Okay, so I'm curious about the scouting report. Is she like number four, or does she call them out by name?
Number. It's number.
It's numbers.
It'll
okay.
Be like watch number four. He's loves to drive right, very athletic. Also, you need to keep an eye on number 10. He's the guy that makes them go, stuff like that. Yeah. Very detailed.
When you first got that email, were you kind of like, what is this? Or this is kind of cool?
I was. But then it matches with what our coach is saying. And we're like, okay, well, she does her research. She knows, she knows what she's talking about.
How can you take us inside the team a little bit in terms of all the buzz around not just Sister Jean, obviously you guys winning, what it's like on campus and being a national factor and a national brand coming into this Final Four?
It's great. The support that we have here in Chicago is crazy. Like, we could really say the city is behind us. Just coming home yesterday to the big welcoming of everybody on campus, we're driving down the street, people honking horns because they know it's our bus, like just everything. Like, it's great seeing the support we have back here.
And have you started paying attention to Michigan at all?
I mean, we haven't today. We're going to have film and stuff a little later so to get into it, but we haven't started yet.
Okay, and Mitch being involved in this, you know, over at Kansas, do you two still connect? Do you two talk? Have you visited during the tournament at all via text?
Every day. I talk to Mitch probably every day. Yeah. Like, since we've left high school, we have, like, a little group chat or whatever that some of the high school guys have kept. And we keep in contact. I called him before the game, before his game. He contacted me before mine. So, yeah, we keep in contact.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Where would you two be without Gilbert Christian? I'll end on that note. What did Gilbert Christian do to prepare the both of you?
It gave us a lot of challenges. I mean, a lot of people were saying the same thing when we moved conferences up to Division II. Mm-hmm. And we won our state championship. A lot of people were like, you can't handle it, all of that. And it helped us have that, well, helped me, I could say, have that same feeling, that underdog feeling of, we could still do something and make it happen. So I would say that Gilbert Christian and the close-knit team that we have, I brought that to this team.
That's awesome. Good stuff there. Well, look, enjoy San Antonio. We appreciate the time and the great story there, Cam. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
There's Cam Satterwhite, former Gilbert Christian High star guard. And, man, he's overcome a lot. Because Cam, remember Cam Satterwhite, Eric, at Gilbert Christian? Just the explosive plays, and he was something else. Kevin Harlan's on the other side. We're back after this timeout. Our thanks again to Cam Satterwhite. Good to catch up with the former Gilbert Christian High guard. If you missed any part of that interview, it'll be up throughout the day over on our websites, sports360az.com. We also partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central have it up as well. The loyal of Chicago Rambler. Good to catch up with him. Local kid making good. As promised, let's turn our attention now. Kevin Harlan is with us. Always good to have one of the leading voices in all of sports. CBS College Basketball, NFL on CBS, play-by-play announcer. He has been traveling right and left throughout March Madness. You actually did the Missouri Valley Championship game, so you saw Loyola. I know you've just finished up the West region with Michigan. I appreciate you coming on board because I know you've been traveling so much, Kevin. Thanks.
Good to be on, Brad, and a great time of year with our Cinderella, and we've got high seeds, and I think we've quenched everybody's thirst for what they're looking for. On Blue Bloods, we've got that. If you want a Cinderella, we certainly have that as much as at any time in the most recent past. So I think it's going to be a Final Four with something for everyone coming up in San Antonio.
So let's look over at the Missouri Valley Championship game that you did in Loyola of Chicago. And did you see this coming? I'm not going to say Final Four, but did you see a team that, wow, they're kind of interesting and they could make a bit of a run?
Well, they have every category filled. First of all, the Missouri Valley Conference, Brad, is a pretty good conference. In fact, I think we showed a graphic on CBS before the championship game, and it was rated with an RPI through the regular season as like the sixth or seventh best conference in college basketball. And in comparison, for instance, the Atlantic 10 was the 10th in RPI. So we knew the conference was good, even with the defection of Wichita State. You know, they moved to the AAC, so they were out of it. Creighton had moved before that to the Big East, so you were left with teams like Illinois State and Southern Illinois and Loyola of Chicago, which had not been to the NCAA tournament since 1985. They had been receiving some top 25 votes, and they were the regular season champions of the Missouri Valley Conference, the first time they had won it outright since 85. They had beaten Illinois State in the championship game, and they had every category filled. They had the freshman of the year, and this kid named Cam Crutwig from Algonquin, Illinois, who's a 6'9 center. They had countless all MVC players in the first, second, and third team, but they had the Larry Bird Trophy winner in Clayton Custer. They had the defensive player of the year in Ben Richardson. Interestingly enough, as we've probably now grown accustomed to hearing over the last couple weeks, Custer and Richardson were high school teammates. In fact, they had played on the same team since they were like in third grade. And they also had the Missouri Valley Conference sixth player of the year, sixth man of the year in Andre Jackson. So they had kind of covered every category. They have young players. They have veteran players. And by the way, Custer was a transfer from Iowa State, so they had even Power 5 conference transfer kids on their team. So do you expect it, since they had not been there in 33 years? No. But the fact that they got the bid by winning the tournament, even though they were outright champions and had to win that tournament to get in, makes for a pretty interesting story. And sure enough, here they are now in the Final Four. Not unlike Shaka Smart's VCU team of 2011 and George Mason and on. We've seen these kinds of stories in the past. And it's fun to have at least one remaining here in our Final Four.
Well, when you talk about strength of schedule with conferences, we're sitting out here in Pac-12 territory, and you know how that went. And so it is refreshing to see a conference have a deep run, especially with all the talent that was going on out west, the problems down at U of A. It's kind of washed over the college basketball bad taste for fans out here to see a story, not just of Loyola of Chicago, but also of Michigan. I think of the four teams everybody's talking about today, Michigan is the one that's probably receiving the least amount of conversation and talk. You saw them. What did you make out of Michigan?
I kind of think they're like the perfect team. They're not based on one kid. They aren't reliant on one player. They've got a 6'11 kid who can shoot threes, and he's made more three-point shots for that size than any other player in college basketball. A kid from Berlin, Germany, named Mo Wagner. They have got a couple of freshmen they have used very effectively, one of which starts, who is the reigning Mr. Michigan High School Basketball Player of the Year. They've got a Kentucky transfer in Charles Matthews, who has pretty much been a player as an afterthought during the regular season, picked up a little steam in the Big Ten tournament, and has turned out to be the leading scorer for the Wolverines in the NCAAs and one of the top rebounders. They've got a heady point guard who is a sophomore, who is the Ohio High School Basketball Player of the Year, in Xavier Simpson, who is coached by his dad. And those coaching-like fingerprints are all over his play. Then they have this other kid named Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman, who was a 4A All-Star player, All-State player in Pennsylvania, coached by his dad in middle school. His dad is a junior college coach. And he is a senior who is now going to start his 143rd game played and his 66th consecutive game started for Michigan. So he comes in with a wealth of experience. And just a couple guys off the bench, nothing really to raise your eyebrows, but that's kind of the way John Beilein is, the coach of Michigan. He really loves spacing. He loves bigs who can shoot and bring out other bigs to defend. Not unlike what Mike D'Antoni wanted to do with the Suns back in the early 2000s. They like to push the ball. But this year, Brad, above any other, Michigan has played defense. Their defensive efficiency going into the tournament was number three of all the teams that were remaining, and it has played a very heavy hand in why they're a Final Four team right now.
Kevin Harlan with us, CBS College Basketball, NFL on CBS. Really good stuff there, breaking down Michigan. I do have to ask you about Dana Jacobson and Leonard Hamilton, because there has been so much made out of it, Kevin. And what were your thoughts in the heat of the moment with the coach, his apology, how your sideline reporter handled it? What did you make out of that whole incident?
I thought Dana asked the question that had to be asked, and there was not a time limit on it. So it wasn't like, hey, you've got 2 minutes to talk to this guy in a losing locker room, which is difficult for any coach. It's actually crushing to see someone who has gone. He's a 69-year-old coach who has been at some prominent schools. He went to three Final Fours as an assistant at Kentucky. He had never taken a team as a head coach at Oklahoma State, Miami, or now Florida State to an Elite Eight. So this is the furthest he had gone as a head coach. What was hard to see, in addition to being the uncomfort of the kind of the semi-confrontation between these two, was that there were assistant coaches, from what my guys tell me, calling for a timeout or a foul on Duncan Robinson once the Michigan player had rebounded the ball with 11 seconds remaining. And if there is any lesson to be learned from this past college basketball season, it's that with very little time and regardless of the deficit, you can win a game.
Yep.
We have seen UVA do it against Louisville earlier on and was stunning then, and who's to say it couldn't have happened again? But they chose not to. And I think that question had to be asked, and she has got the reporting chops to do it. She is employed also by CBS News, so she has that in her background. And now whether it should be the first question out of the gate or perhaps the second question or third question, that's debatable.
Mm-hmm.
But the question had to be asked. His reaction was, in the moments after a disappointing loss, in the furthest he had ever climbed in that on that ladder in the tournament, so you can appreciate his feelings. But as he's come out even today, Brad, and said, I regret the way I handled the interview. And mm-hmm. I think Dana has been proven right. I think everybody in the reporting business says she asked the right question. But again, whether it was in the right sequence, whether it should have been the second or third question, is debatable. I guess there is this kind of unwritten rule that you go in with more of a complimentary, a softball question,
right,
establish rapport, and then you get him or her with a second or third question, the thing that really is the most topical, the most important, and that can be tossed back and forth. But the question had to be asked, and I thought she asked it.
And I agree with you. You guys were talking about it on the broadcast, Reggie and Dan and yourself, so that, I mean, that's fair game. Fair enough on that. I've had people texting me and sending in notes about it. Before I get you out of here, if you look at the other side of the bracket with Nova and Kansas, what do you make out of that matchup? Have you seen enough of both teams? I know when you get into March Madness, you're just going with that region. If you have a thought on Nova, Kansas.
Having seen two Villanova games recently, Brad, in Pittsburgh in that first weekend, I can tell you that they have got everything that a team would want. They have had 30-win seasons. I think now they've won, 33, 34 games. In the previous 4 years, they had won 30, 32, 35, and 33. They have a National Player of the Year candidate. They have got sharpshooters from outside. They can play different ways. They can go inside with bigs, but those bigs can shoot the three. They have guard play that has all three long-range shooting guards able to orchestrate an offense and facilitate what needs to be done. They've been in the bullseye the entire season. They have been a top 10 team most of the year, number one for 14 weeks of the 34 AP college basketball top 25 polls. They played in a tough conference. They're the highest scoring team in college basketball. They're a number one seed for a second straight year. They have got everything that you would want, a continuous winning streak that extends beyond their conference tournament, a lot of NCAA experience with this group, a bench that goes pretty deep, a coach who just won a Final Four a couple of years ago. I mean, I think Villanova's got everything, thus the number one seed, and thus I think the perfect team to be in a Final Four. And the Kansas side, this was probably the most unexpected outcome of any of Bill Self's teams in Lawrence.
Hmm.
They won the conference again for an unprecedented and historic 14th consecutive year. And when you think about that, that every year you go against the teams that know you the best, the teams in the conference, and unlike other conferences, you don't play them once, you play them twice,
right,
home and away. You play them also in the postseason tournament. So they see you again. They know every issue you've got, every strength, every weakness, and yet they still want it. And not only won the postseason and the regular season, now they go to a Final Four as a number one seed based on the strength of the conference and the fact that they won it without really, aside from Devontae Graham, who's a sensational player, but not a resounding National Player of the Year type of player. He's a guard. He's not a high-scoring guard, but he does everything. He will play defense. He will run your offense. He plays multiple minutes deep into the 30 minutes a game range. He led them in scoring, but just in the middle teens, nothing that would just be eye-popping. But his leadership has been contagious for a team that really does not have a lot of star power as past Kansas teams have. So this is a different kind of team that Bill Self brings to the Final Four. It validates him certainly as a Hall of Fame coach, I think, even again. This matchup it would be a great national championship matchup between Villanova and Kansas. Villanova has got a lot of things to worry about. And I don't know that Kansas even playing Duke last night, I don't think, Brad, that Kansas has seen a team as multifaceted and as three-point savvy as this Villanova team is. It'll be a tough chore. But anyway you look at it, we've got every corner of this Final Four covered, which I think is going to make it really fun to watch.
And I agree with you on that. I am not going to ask you who's going to win because I hate that question. So I'm just going to let you go, unless you want to throw it in there.
Thanks.
You know,
I mean, I'm
just
a Kansas grad.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's fine. I just enjoy hearing you break it down as well as you do. As always, I appreciate your time and your insight, Kevin. Thanks.
Always a pleasure, Brad. Thank you.
There's Kevin Harlan with us. Good to catch up with Kevin. CBS College Basketball, NFL on CBS. Michael Fabiano is going to drop in on the other side because free agency in the NFL is pretty much done. And now we're already starting to look at the fantasy implications of free agency. That's next. Now we turn our attention away from March Madness for a few minutes because there has been so many questions that fans have sent in and been asking about in terms of fantasy football. Michael Fabiano is with us from the NFL Network because all things fantasy, now that free agency is essentially over, the big pieces have fallen. We start looking ahead to the draft. There's so much to get to with Michael. How are you, Hall of Famer?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I'm terrific. I don't know if I'm over the top terrific with Sam Bradford and Mike Glennon, so let's just start with the Cardinals. And we'll get into the other quarterbacks in a minute. But from a fantasy standpoint, no more Carson Palmer. From a fantasy standpoint, Michael, Sam Bradford, Mike Glennon, the quarterbacks here in Arizona.
Well, you weren't going to have Palmer back because he retired. And your other alternatives were what?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, I don't think they're paying Sam Bradford $20 million. I mean, this guy's not a terrible quarterback. He's not Carson Palmer by any stretch of the imagination in terms of his statistical success. But, I mean, you know, would I have liked to have seen them bring in maybe a Teddy Bridgewater who's got a little more upside? You know, maybe. But you also don't know about the health of his leg. And you would think the Cardinals are going to be at least looking potentially for a quarterback in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Bradford is necessarily a bad pickup from a fantasy perspective. He's not a QB1. He's clearly a QB2 who probably won't be drafted in a lot of leagues. But I think the impact is going to be felt more on David Johnson and especially Larry Fitzgerald, a guy who is clearly going to the Hall of Fame, one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League and fantasy football. And he put up numbers last year with Blaine Gabbert slinging him the rock. So I think this is a good thing for Fitzgerald because the alternatives could have been worse than getting Sam Bradford. And again, you're paying this guy $20 million. So the Cardinals believe that he can at least win them some games and get the ball to their superstars.
Who won big in fantasy?
Well, the first guy is Jerick McKinnon. When you look at a player who was always sort of mentioned as a potential sleeper, never really got the opportunities, and when he did, he ended up being in committees. But now he's in San Francisco, where Kyle Shanahan, who has had a top eight PPR running back in three straight seasons, is the coach. And last year, Carlos Hyde, who was never really known as a great pass catcher, I mean, this guy was 15% of their pass, of their target share. And now you bring McKinnon in. Not to say the Niners may not bring someone else in through the draft, but right now he looks like the featured guy. And Devonta Freeman put up some pretty good numbers under Shanahan. That's the role that McKinnon will play in San Francisco. I think anyone wearing a Vikings jersey was also a big winner because Kirk Cousins comes in there. And you know, not to besmirch Case Keenum at all, but Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback. And he could end up being a very solid fantasy quarterback, much like he's been, maybe even a little bit better. He's going to play his games in domes. He's going to also have a lot more talent there in Minnesota with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and Dalvin Cook and Kyle Rudolph. So he's a player that you have to like. Allen Robinson also was a winner going to Chicago. And I get it. Mitchell Trubisky needs to take the next step, much like Jared Goff did this past season. But Robinson is going to be just absolutely inundated with targets without question. And those opportunities, even if the Bears aren't a good team, and I think they'll be better, especially with what they've done in the offseason offensively, Allen Robinson should still be a wide receiver too for fantasy fans. I think Jimmy Graham was also a winner. Goes to Green Bay. Anytime you go to a place where Aaron Rodgers is throwing you the football, giddy up, my friend. That is a win. And he is going to be utilized in the red zone quite a bit, especially with Jordy Nelson being released.
He is the Hall of Famer. He is Michael Fabiano, breaking down the free agency side of fantasy football. So talk some draft stuff here in a second. Who are the players in fantasy that you looked at and said, why would you go there? This is not going to help you other than pad your checkbook.
The first one that comes to mind is Hyde, because he goes from again, 15% target share in San Francisco, a guy who scored 40% of his PPR points last year as a pass catcher, to Cleveland, where they already have Duke Johnson, who made up for 16% of Cleveland's target share last year. And that's going to drop, because they also brought in Jarvis Landry, and they also have Josh Gordon. My God, the Browns are fantasy relevant, and they're going to be good. It's something that I'm going to have to wrap my head around. Heck, my buddy Miz from WWE, you know, he thinks they're going to the Super Bowl. Okay, maybe he's a little too excited as a Browns fan, but this team is going to be exciting to watch. But Carlos Hyde was a top eight PPR running back last year. That's not going to happen. And what happens if the Browns end up getting Saquon Barkley in the draft, which a lot of people that I work with believe could happen at number four? That would cause Carlos Hyde's value to sink even more. I think Sammy Watkins going to the Chiefs is a good reality move, especially for Patrick Mahomes. But I don't think it's a good move from a fantasy perspective. He's a guy who had ballpark 70 targets last year. I don't know that he'll have more than 70 or 80 in Kansas City with Travis Kelce there and Tyreek Hill there and Kareem Hunt. So I don't know that his value rises very much. Deion Lewis, and I'm just talking about guys who changed teams.
Sure.
Really good at the end of last year. Put up some very good numbers for the Patriots and for fantasy owners. Now he goes to Tennessee. And this one's a domino effect. He knocks down the value of Derrick Henry, who I loved before he got a backfield committee mate, let's put it that way, to now being an RB2. And Deion Lewis, instead of going to a San Francisco and Indianapolis, where he could have ended up being more of a featured back, he goes to Tennessee, where he is second on the depth chart and will clearly be utilized as a pass catcher. But he can also run between the tackles. So I don't know if you're going to see a 50-50 split. I would doubt that. I still think Henry gets 60-65% of the workload, but it still hurts Deion Lewis's value. It hurt Henry's value as well. And another player that I mentioned already that I don't like in terms of where he went is Jordy Nelson. Anytime you go from Aaron Rodgers to any other quarterback in the league, unless it's, you know, Tom Brady or Drew Brees, it's going to be a downgrade. And if you look at the Raiders and what they've done in the offseason, it's all been geared towards running the football. Like, John Gruden wants to go back to, like, the 60s and 70s and just run it, like, 70 times a game, it seems like. You know, they've got four running backs back there, signed a fullback, you know, they've signed some run-blocking tight ends. I mean, they're going to run it. And Jordy Nelson is a guy who will be 33 when the season starts. So his time as an elite fantasy wide receiver is clearly in the rearview mirror. Not to say that David Carr is not a good quarterback, because I like Derek and he is, but he is no Aaron Rodgers.
Before I get you out of here, we're talking with the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano from NFL Network and, of course, NFL.com, all things fantasy football related. As you look at the draft with these quarterbacks, if they go 1, 2, 3, 4, which one has the best chance early? Because I know where you are on quarterbacks. Wait. Mm-hmm. But which one of them or two of them do you look at and say, wow, if this one goes there, this is going to be lookout time. Grab this guy.
There isn't one, to be quite honest with you. The only scenario that I can see for a rookie quarterback to come in and make a major impact, and major might be overstating it a little bit, is if Lamar Jackson ends up going to, say, Buffalo, because I like him so much. Mm. Because if you look at the last decade of rookie quarterbacks who have actually put up good fantasy numbers, what is the one thing they have in common? They run with the football. And I can give you a list of 10 guys, but I'm not going to bore you with all of them. He has the type of potential to be a fantasy star. If Sam Darnold goes to the Browns, like a lot of us think, he's going to be behind Tyrod Taylor. If Josh Rosen goes to the Giants, he's going to be behind Eli Manning. If the Jets draft, for example, Baker Mayfield, or if they draft the kid out of Wyoming,
Josh Allen,
I mean,
yeah.
you don't see these guys coming in and being immediate starters. I mean, the Jets, they signed Bridgewater, they re-signed Josh McCown. So there's one spot that I think a rookie quarterback could potentially come in and start right away, and that is Buffalo. And not to say A.J. McCarron, you know, doesn't have what it takes to be a decent NFL starter, but Lamar Jackson is a difference maker. And if he goes to Buffalo, that kid could come in and really make an impact if he wins that starting job. We've also seen some mock drafts where he's going to the Jacksonville Jaguars late. That one I don't see happening. I just really like what he can potentially bring to the table for fantasy owners. And I would argue that if you're in a dynasty league, Lamar Jackson should be the first quarterback picked. Mm. Regardless of who goes ahead of him, Darnold will go ahead of him likely. Rosen will go ahead of him likely. Allen will go ahead of him potentially. Baker Mayfield as well. Lamar Jackson's the guy that you want. And heck, maybe even the Cardinals try and get a Lamar Jackson. That would be exciting to see him there in Arizona for sure. But I think Buffalo right now, if they can trade up, and you know they're trying to put their assets together, they've already started to make a couple of trades. If they can move up and get him, watch out. He's going to be on my sleeper list, no question about that. But this draft, Brad, is all about the running backs, and we've been doing this for a long time. You've been hearing me say the revival is coming. Well, the revival is here. It came last year. It's going to continue with these young running backs coming into the league. A lot of the veteran guys are sort of being filtered out, and you are going to see a big-time jump in the value of running backs again this season. And you know me, as a running back truther, that is very exciting.
No, that's you. That's you for sure. Appreciate your time and insight as always, Michael. Thanks.
Always a pleasure.
There's Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network and NFL.com, senior fantasy analyst, and, of course, a Hall of Famer when it comes to fantasy sports. Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. We are here every day at 10 a.m. We do this, then we put it over on the site. It just runs all day and all night. AZ Central is a partner of ours, the Arizona Republic. It runs on their site all day, all night. We have our television show on Fox Sports Arizona that has 16 airings per week. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, and much, much more as we spread out and do our thing. We are self-funded. We appreciate those who look at us and say, our company believes in you, and we appreciate those that have been on board with us through the years. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, as always, produces. Have yourself a great Monday.